You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Spilling Ink is brought to you by Book Branders, your self-publishing concierge.
I feel like this scene was made for you and I. Like, I'm actually gray, and you're the sage old woman trying to talk sense into me.
Are you sure you read that scene? Because he's more the voice of reason than she is.
Oh, well, hi, everybody. This is kind of like a pop-up little Spilling Ink fun thing that we're doing. It's not actually a show, but we found this cool scene from a book. What book was this from, Katie?
Magic in Disguise.
Magic in Disguise. And who wrote it? Because I don't really know the author.
It's this like really lesser known author that's trying to make it into the big time. I don't know. You might have heard of her before. Her name's Katie Salaitis.
Well, it sounds interesting. And so this is book three of The Agents of Assets, right?
Yeah, and this is actually the one that just came out. So this is like hot off the presses, fresh material.
So yeah, this released on Christmas, right?
Yep, I was able to get it to push early.
Nice. And it's not the beginning of the book. This is like chapter 18, something like that.
Yeah, right? This is like way deep into it. But it doesn't give away any of the actual plot. It's just a great interaction between two of the main characters.
Okay. Well, so, and I have named this scene the scene of Coffee and Snark. Because Snark is an integral part of not only this book, but of Katie's life.
Are you calling me snarky?
Your life is all about Snark.
That's true. And I do love it when the characters bicker. I think that's part of my favorite, you know, writing is when I get to have a scene where I really put the characters at odds with each other for whatever reason and just let them hash it out.
Heck yeah. I like it. And you know what? I feel like that's some of the most natural sounding dialogue too, is when they're just kind of going at it and growing crazy. Oh, Hey, I've got a weird, look, I've got a second screen on here. That was bizarre. So weird. Oh, anyhow, you know, I could see myself moving over there. I'm like, what the heck is that? There was like another video screen going. Somebody's spying on me.
You've gone completely dark now.
All right. So, I'm completely dark?
Yeah. You're a ghost. You're speaking to us from the beyond.
Really? How is that possible?
I don't know.
Wait, what about now?
Well, now I've got your little avatar.
What? How do I get back in here? Oh, am I back?
There you are.
Oh, my God. This is freaking me out, Katie. Are you doing this just to mess with me?
I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting here.
Well, and you know, I really like your new office. Where are you?
Allie's going to kill me. I keep using her bedroom.
Is that Jon Snow with really crazy eyes behind you?
Actually, I think it's Kylo Ren, and he's hugging. It's really dark. You can't tell the Darth Vader hat helmet.
Oh, that's cool. Man, Allie has the coolest artwork.
Yeah. Yeah, her entire room. If I could easily move the webcam, I would show you. The entire perimeter of her walls is covered with different pop culture type posters and stuff. Everything from The Legend of Zelda to we've got Doctor Who, we've got The Flash, I've got the Joker and Harley Quinn, we've got Pikachu, we've got Mario, we've got Stranger Things. I mean, it's like the entire area around her room is just covered wall to wall with posters.
Her room is like a comic convention.
Pretty much.
Well, all right, guys. So we have a little treat for you tonight. Katie and I are going to narrate a scene from Magic in Disguise.
We're going to attempt to see how well it goes.
We can do it. We can do this. All right. So I'm going to start us out. Is everybody ready? The day had far too many ups and downs to be dealt with on such a little supply of caffeine. God, that's like me today. That's like today for me.
We can all relate to that.
Gray brought them to a diner to refuel before they started on the shopping list Mark had given them. Sage slid into a booth, grabbing the menu, eager to devour everything listed on the breakfast column. Gray flagged a waitress down and ordered the coffee. He must have read her mind. after all the driving they'd done, she could probably polish off a whole pot on her own.
Did you know Ava would track us down? Sage asked, keeping her face behind the plastic menu.
Are you really that surprised? Gray chuckled.
So, all that back in my apartment about turning me in was just for show? Sage hated the way that she just couldn't read that man's intentions.
Someday you will have to trust that I'm on your side.
She glared at him over the top of her menu. You didn't answer the question.
Yes and no. How's that for an answer?
I hate you.
You're so cute when you're angry. The waitress set two mugs down and filled them to the brim with liquid energy. Sage ordered herself a lumberjack's breakfast. Gray ordered the endless stack of pancakes.
I'm serious, you know, Sage whispered as the waitress walked back to place their order.
Gray's brow scrunched with confusion. No, I don't know. What?
I can't read you.
He shifted uncomfortably in his seat. We're back to that again, are we?
Truth time. I want to know what's going on in that head of yours.
I could ask the same of you. He fidgeted with his coffee, adding sugar and staring down at it as he stirred it well past the point of mixing his drink.
When we first met, you were a royal ass who made no secret of your unhappiness in being tethered to me as a partner.
Newbies are insufferable. He leaned back and put his arms over the edge of the booth.
I'm still a newbie, but you've changed. She stared into his eyes. What's with the Mother Hen Act?
Is it a crime to care about the welfare of my partner? Let me ask you this. If it were me, cursed and possibly facing down death, how would you act?
No fair. I'm...
A girl?
I was going to say I wear my emotions on my sleeves. I'm not the one acting out of character here.
So now I care too much? He chuckled, clearly amused with his ability to get under her skin.
No. Stop twisting my words around. I just mean that you're acting differently than I expected. I want to know if there's something else going on.
I told you, we're not talking about my past or partners.
Exactly what she thought he'd say. She sipped her coffee, black, hoping that the hot infusion of caffeine would spur her brain into action. She needed all the help she could get playing the mental game with him. Probably an insufferable girl, right?
You don't give up, do you? He moved in closer, hovering over his coffee as if looking deep into its murky depths for an answer.
We agreed to honesty and laying it all out there so that we can better understand each other and work together. She whispered softly so that the waitress couldn't hear as she passed her booth on the way to the other table.
You don't need recounted war stories and death tallies to understand me.
His evasiveness, more than anything else, made her want to dig deeper. He could have given her any small detail, and she might have dropped the subject. But the fact that he continued his blockade had her curiosity up to an 11. But I don't understand you. She gulped down the rest of her coffee, giving time for her words to sink in. I have nothing to go on. I don't even know where you live.
Gray was as thick as a brick wall. He shrugged her off. Why would you?
You know where I live.
Because you need a damn chauffeur.
The transportation issue is going to become a serious problem if she didn't get a car eventually. I'll ride the bus, she snapped at him.
You don't have to get defensive. Not everything is an insult.
Sounds like it coming from you. Her coffee gone, Sage glanced around for the waitress and motioned with her cup when she got her attention.
That's just you being sensitive.
Hey! Her mouth hung open, with no snappy reply finding its way to the surface.
You said it, Gray smirked, clearly satisfied he'd silenced her. You wear your emotions out there for all to see.
Her instincts would normally have her fighting back, but that would only egg him on. She needed a better way to wipe that self-important grin off his face. Kill him with kindness. That had thrown him off his game in the past. He expected her snark. You got me there, she conceded his victory sweetly. The waitress came by, hot pot of coffee in hand, and refilled their mugs. Sage took a long pull from hers. Black coffee wasn't exactly her favorite flavor, but slugging it down the way she did worked wonders jump-starting her mind. Gray, on the other hand, looked as if he'd lost something. Her plan was working. He just couldn't compete against her when she played nice. You're right. I'm sensitive to those I care for. And you're my partner, so I want to know more about you. Sage gave him her most innocent smile. So tell me all about Gray, the guy, not the agent. Where do you live?
He glared at her suspiciously, his brow forming deep creases, crow's feet creeping out from the corners of his eyes, aging his eternally youthful face. I've got an apartment down by Boulder, Boulder Highway, and Trop.
See, any roommates?
I don't know anything about Vegas, Katie.
Those are just two cross streets.
Boulder Highway and Trop.
Any roommates? She fired off her next question eagerly. A few more ready should he take the bait.
We are really doing this. The whole first date line of questioning?
This is not a date.
I don't know. We're at a restaurant, about to share a meal, talking about our feelings.
Damn him, he was on to her. Whatever. She pretended to shrug him off. Poke fun all you like. I've learned more from you in 5 minutes than I have the entire time we've been partners.
That's just because you don't pay attention. He took a swig of his coffee. No roommates.
Pets?
Nope.
Hobbies?
Please stop.
Girlfriends?
Gray looked up from his coffee, meeting her in a dead stare. Enough.
Ooh, she'd hit a nerve there. See, you're a closed book. I can't read you. And every time I get you to open up just slightly, you slam shut again.
You're not trying to get to know me. You're fishing.
Eh, semantics.
You want some truth? I appreciate genuine people. And I can smell bullshit a mile away.
I smell bullshit, she mocked him.
Gray's phone went off. He picked it up, and his already angry expression darkened. Sage's phone went off next. She reached to answer it, but Gray snatched it from her and dunked it into her cup of coffee.
The hell?
Time to go. He grabbed her by the arm, threw two $20 bills on the table, and pulled her toward the door.
Sage didn't fight his grip on her arm. As mad as she was, he'd just destroyed her phone. The fact that he'd done it meant some major kind of shit was hitting the fan. Are you going to tell me what's going on?
They came to an abrupt stop at his bike. Gray glanced around cautiously before showing her his phone. Text from Ava.
Agent Sinrig, location unknown, in possession of artifact ID, Sponge. Apprehend and return to Las Vegas HQ. Holy shit, what the hell? She gasped and immediately slapped her hand over her mouth. Things had truly taken a turn for the worse.
That text just went out to all active asset agents. Gray didn't need to explain it. She'd already guessed as much. You've been marked. We're not safe here any longer.
But why? That was the bit she didn't understand. Ava had always been two steps ahead of him. She'd even known that they were in Phoenix. Why send this? Why was she a marked woman now? Why not contact Set?
My guess? Grace spoke calmly. If he was worried, she'd never be able to tell. Word of your little escapade with the ethereals just got to her.
That didn't take long.
I was hoping we'd have more time before that piece of information crossed her desk. Grace sighed.
So you're taking me in then. She held her hands out, ready for the cuffs, really wishing that she'd have gotten her last meal. She'd been so looking forward to bacon and eggs. No luck of that while locked up in assets prison.
He slapped her hands away. What do you think?
Ava gave you an order.
You're not good at reading between the lines, are you?
Apparently not, she huffed.
Ava told you if your secret got out, your life was forfeit.
Yeah.
So taking you into headquarters right now is a death sentence.
If she hadn't been stressing out, she might have called him Captain Obvious. At best, she might lose her hand and be locked away in asset for the rest of what remained of her life. At worst, she might get a quick death. Either way, she'd run out of time. You're a company man, she said. You do what you're told, right?
You wound me.
Just tell me what the hell you plan to do. I can't read you. Stop the cryptic crap because I'm about 2 seconds from a heart attack.
You'd survive a heart attack. Disappointment soured his tone, but it was the look of outrage that struck her as hard as a slap on the face. Had she really misread him that badly? I'm not about to march you in to die when we have a shot at fixing you. He turned away from her and grabbed his helmet. And I can't believe that after all we've been through together, you'd think so lowly of me.
She hadn't realized how much her offhand comment would affect him. With his helmet on, Sage could no longer see the pained look in his eyes. But somehow, she felt the weight of her words more strongly. She hadn't intended to insult him. Calling someone a company man would normally be a compliment. more evidence to her argument of not knowing him. But this wasn't the time to bring that back up. I'm sorry. She stumbled for the right words. I just thought not following a direct order from Ava will get you in trouble.
I'm always in trouble. The helmet hid his face, but couldn't disguise the disappointment in his voice. That's why Ava assigned me to you.
Should I be worried or impressed?
Yes, he answered quickly.
She'd meant her question as a joke, but he responded as if she'd lobbed yet another accusation at him. Best she kept her mouth shut, at least until things blew over. Despite all her confusion, one thing was clear. As long as she was with Gray, she was safe from Asset.
Gray threw his phone down in the dirt and stomped on the screen a few times before mounting his bike. We better go before they track our phones here. Whee!
Yeah, I had to add that last little edit to the end.
So tell me a little bit about this scene here. Katie, what did we just witness here? What's happening?
Okay, so it should be pretty clear that those two are on the run. Now, anybody who's read the series knows that Gray was reluctantly assigned to Sage as a partner. And he's made no qualms about his annoyance at her complete and utter newbiness.
Well, based on some of the language in this, it seems like there's a lot going on. There's like some kind of agency, secret agency, and based on the word ethereals, I'm assuming they're some kind of magical race.
Yep. So the Asset series, Asset stands for the Anonymous Supernatural Security and Elimination Task Force. And they are basically magical police force, if you want to call them that. The FBI of the magical world. They run completely under the radar, and they police the four families of magic. Terras, which are usually the ones that become Asset agents. They are magic neutral creatures. There's the Ethereals, the Elementals, and the Shades. And those make up the four branches of the magical families.
Now, what's a magic neutral creature? Is that like us because we don't have magic or?
No, it is actually a type of magic. And I kind of discussed that in the book a little bit because what Sage has done up to this point has caused a lot of problems in the magical community. And everything surrounds this weapon of magical destruction that everybody's after. A magic neutral creature is exactly that. They are magic, but their magic is in neutralizing all other forms of magic. They can't be helped by it. They can't be hurt by it. They can't cast spells. They can't conjure anything, but they also can't be harmed by it in any way.
Interesting. Impressive.
And that's usually why they become part of the magical police force, because they're able to withstand anything that another creature can throw at them.
So in these two characters, do they love each other or hate each other? Because I'm already shipping them together.
They are total frenemies all the way up to this point.
Well, so this book is available now. Where can people get this book?
Anywhere. And it's actually, I've recently been dabbling with Ingram's hardbound editions. And this one is the first series that actually will be available in hardback.
You know, I really, really, really want to do the hardback thing, but I'm really not sure if I have the skills to pull it off. It looked like it was kind of complicated.
Well,
did you have help or did you do it all yourself?
Yeah, the complicated part's in the cover because it's a different template than the paperback cover. There's so much more bleed space that I tried to manipulate the print cover, the regular paperback cover, and couldn't do it myself. I had to go back to the cover artist who created it and please, 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 can you fix this for me? And even she was like, oh my God, this is a huge difference in template. So that was the biggest stumbling block. The interior is the same. Since I like the 5x8 size, I wanted my hardbounds to match my paper. And so I did the same 5x8. I could have done any size. If you know how to do the formatting, it's not a big deal. So that wasn't an issue. The other big issue is the cost. They are ridiculously more expensive than their paperback counterparts. So they're kind of reserved for more special editions, I think.
Well, yeah, I kind of just want them to like give to friends and families and stuff. I know that's not good business. No. That's not a good business decision, but that'd be an awesome thing to be able to give someone as a gift.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was thinking too. I mean, when we go to a convention, sure, having a couple of special editions on hand might be great, and then maybe somebody would buy them. But the people that are closest to you, they really appreciate them. So my best friend, I told her her Christmas present's coming late. She's going to get the trilogy in hardbound. Her husband is actually one of the early beta readers on that book. So that's going to be something special for them. My dad absolutely loves to read, and he's read everything that I've put out. So for his birthday coming up, he's going to get the set in hardbound. So yeah, it's more for those special gifts that you want to give away.
That's cool. And you know, speaking of giveaways, that would actually be, that would be a cool thing to give away to fans or, you know, newsletter subscribers, things like that, you know, because a lot of people are giving away ebooks right now or paperbacks. And I still love getting paperbacks. But yeah, a cool hardbound book, man, that would be, that's awesome.
Yeah. And the only thing though with that, and I've talked budget before, every time we talk about anything self-publishing related, keep in mind that if you are going to do it for a giveaway, the cost difference between your paperback and your hardback is going to be double to almost triple depending on the size. So for instance, I can print a paperback book shipped and everything for probably $4 to $5. That same book is going to be probably $10 to $11, just your cost in printing and shipping to get it to you.
Oh,
hold on a second. I gotta try. I'll be right back.
Oh. Well, I'm not really sure where Katie went. She said some words that I clearly wasn't listening to and then took off. I'm assuming it's because the TARDIS arrived in the front of her house and she went to intercept it. I mean, I would do the same thing. TARDIS doesn't come to Michigan, though. It's too freaking cold here. Yeah, and it's ridiculous, you know. We didn't have a white Christmas, and that's okay because I don't really like snow, but it's still cold as hell here. It's cold, Katie. We had a brown Christmas, but it's still freezing cold.
How do you have a brown Christmas? Doesn't it like always snow there?
It does. This is some kind of freak thing here in Michigan. We have no snow. It snowed once, and it snowed a good amount, but now it's gone. But what happens is when it snows once here in Michigan, everything gets really soggy and muddy and disgusting, unless it keeps snowing. And if it doesn't start snowing, then nothing is going to cover up the dog poop in the backyard that I haven't gone to pick up. And it will just look gross and make me feel guilty. So I need that blanket over the dog poop. Yeah.
Okay. See, now for me, if it's cold and there's no snow, then it's like, why is it cold? This is worthless. There is no point to the cold if there is no beautiful snow on the ground. And since we don't really get snow here, it's, for me, it's been a really sad Christmas because it's chilly, but it's not snowing. And it's like, come on, just warm up a little now. I don't want to wear jackets anymore.
Well, I thought you guys were going up to the mountain to check out the snow.
We never made it.
Well, that's not cool.
Yeah, that's nobody cool wanted to go. They kept fighting me. And then I said, okay, we're going to do it Saturday. And then my husband got sick. And so we just keep putting it off.
So are we going to do another show before you take off?
I believe we have one on the 5th. And I think I know Jonathan Mayberry is one of the guests on there. I can't remember who our second guest is. That's the one that Jane set up for us.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Wait. Jonathan Mayberry. Why does that name sound so familiar?
Probably because he is in the middle of, or actually not he specifically, but they're in the middle of adapting his book series, The V Wars, into a television series. Yeah.
Oh, that'll be fun. That'll be really fun. Are you going to be on that one too?
Yeah. I'm excited. I want to talk to him. I want to pick his brain, see how this all happened and find out, you know, what does the author get to do as far as that? Because a lot of times we hear from people that when they do an adaptation, they just buy the rights and that's it. You're lucky if your name gets on a byline, you know, adapted from somebody's book. But well, it sounds like he's been a part of it. He's posted a lot of stuff on Facebook with him and the actors, you know, like he's actually been on set. So I really would love to pick his brain and see how that goes.
That's cool. Well, and was it you that I was talking to about Margaret Atwood?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't remember the topic.
Okay. It might have been my wife, but Margaret Atwood wrote The Handmaid's Tale. And, of course, The Handmaid's Tale is now a huge hit series on Hulu. And it's actually, it's very, very good. The storytelling, I have not read the book. The storytelling in the series, though, is phenomenal, just beautifully made, great cinematography. But there was an interview with her, and she had signed over rights to the book years and years ago, like back in the 80s.
There was an original movie made.
Yes, yeah. She had signed over, it was Warner Brothers, something like that, to make the movie. And so they didn't produce the movie, or they made the movie and it didn't do well. But in any case, they decided to make this series, only because she already signed the rights to Warner Brothers, they owned it and they don't have to pay her anything for this this series that's an enormous hit. So she makes zero off that. Of course, you know, I'm sure there has been a huge increase in book sales. But at the same time, it's like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. You know, I hadn't even thought about that. I just figure, you know, if there's this huge success, that the author is obviously being compensated. You know, it only seems like the way it should be. But I guess that business savvy and maybe a good attorney to look over contracts is probably.
That makes a lot of sense. And honestly, it's kind of a really big gray area, because most of the authors that we've talked to, especially on our show, we would probably sell our souls for a movie deal. And I think that's what happened is, you know, here's a movie deal, sign it away, and you don't think about what's going to happen years to come. And then you end up in a situation like that where, yeah, the Handmaid's Tale is super popular, but you get nothing else from it.
Well, and here's the thing is, I think that a lot of us, not all of us, because I know quite a few authors that think very highly of themselves, which, hey, kudos to you. But a lot of us suffer from a little bit of that imposter syndrome, where we don't think we're as good as the big guys, and we don't think we have that staying power. So somebody says, you know, Jason, I'll give you 10, 20 grand and for the rights to your book. I'm like, yeah, take it, man. Take it, dude. And I'm paying off my car. I'm happy. And come to find out that book is actually extremely successful. And it was a book that changed the game and somehow, and now I've really screwed myself. And of course I haven't had that experience yet. Maybe I will get to have that experience where I get to screw myself like that someday. I hope so.
I would love that experience. Please, yeah. Hollywood, if you're listening, I've got tons of books out there.
Yeah, Hollywood, you can screw me over, okay? It's fine. I'm okay with it.
I do think a lot of us, we're very hungry for that recognition, because we put so much work, we put so much effort into our stories that, you know, any little bit of possible popularity or recognition or wider reach, we're going to grasp for it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. I know I would, for sure. I would. And you know what? We are having a guy on that you'll have to watch the replay, cause you'll be in Hawaii. His name is Russell Nolte, and he is, if you follow him on Facebook, he's a funny guy. Very, very funny, but he's also very outspoken. And sometimes be a little brash or a little abrasive, but he makes good money in this creative gig. You know, he has a 200 episode podcast on how to make money being a creative person. And he's got books about how to make money being a creative person. And he's got fiction novels, and he does all of this. And one of the funny things is he says right on his podcast, I've spent most of my life being a very unlikable person. And I'm like, what? Where the hell is this going, dude? And he said, but I taught myself a set of rules that I needed to follow to get people to engage with me and to buy my products. And I'm like, this sounds like a Vulcan talking. But I'm really excited to have him on, because that's the thing that I don't have. I have a decent personality. I mean, I'm really friendly. You know, I like talking to people. I like engaging with people, but I don't know how to turn that friendliness and that approachability into book sales. So I'm really interested to talk with this guy. So I think that'll be a good one in a few weeks here.
Dang it. I want to be on that show.
Yeah. Well, I could use you as a buffer because I'm not going to lie. This guy is a little intimidating. So it'll be interesting. I might have to wear my suit for that show.
Are you going to bring Jane on as a backup or David?
Yeah, I'm hoping that Jane will be available. I know she's had some stuff going on and hopefully everything is settled for her by then. But yeah, so I'm hoping so. And then I need to find a good companion to pair him with for the show. So I don't know if I want to do two hardline business people or if I want to do, you know, someone that's more business and then someone that's more creative. I know maybe kind of give it a little bit of that sweet and sour kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that usually works. You get the nice contrast there.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, everybody, it was lovely to chat with you. I hope you enjoyed our fun little reading we did tonight of Katie's latest books. I enjoyed doing it very much. But I'm going to go and sign off, get these work clothes off, and go hang out on the couch.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks for watching, everybody. Remember, always hit that like and subscribe button. Tell your friends about us and join us every week on Saturday for a new episode of Spilling Ink.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.